Hi everyone, my name is Neeraj and I work with Microsoft SQL Server support team. In this presentation, we will look at data definition language triggers, or what is commonly called as DDL triggers, and how can we use them. So let's see what will be the agenda for this presentation. We will understand what a DDL trigger is, then explore its several usages. We will see how DDL triggers are implemented, followed by a short demo of an example of such an implementation. We will also be looking at the security concerns and best practices related to DDL triggers. And finally, how DDL triggers can be managed. So, what is a DDL trigger? But before we talk about DDL triggers, let us take a step back and understand what a trigger really is. At a certain level, triggers are basically stored procedures, objects created and stored on your database, which execute automatically in response to a particular event. These events can be categorized into three broad types. Type 1, DML or data manipulation language statements such as update, delete, insert table statements. Type 2, DDL or data definition language, for example, create or drop table statements. And type 3, a logon event, which is similar to establishing a session or opening a new connection on SQL instance. These broad classifications of the events also classifies the types of triggers we can use, which is DML, DDL, and logon. Coming back to DDL triggers, they execute when a DDL event occurs, for example, create or drop table events. Let us now talk about the usages of DDL triggers. When you define a DDL trigger, you get access to information about the event which caused this trigger execution. For example, if you have a trigger defined on a drop table event, you can access information about who executed the drop table command, what was the name of the table, etc. Another important piece to understand is that the execution of the DDL event and the DDL trigger happen in the same transaction. Thus, it is possible to roll back the DDL event based on any condition you may want to specify. We will be looking at an example later which demonstrates this. Thus, using DDL triggers, you can prevent a certain change, such as a drop table event. You have access to the event information based on which you can take any other action. You could audit or log changes that occur for better management and accountability in your system. As you can see, there are several ways in which you can implement these DDL triggers. Let us now understand what a DDL trigger scope is. Unlike standard DML triggers that are associated with specific tables on which the DML trigger is defined, a DDL trigger executes when a particular statement is executed, regardless of the target of that statement. For example, a drop table DDL trigger will fire when any table is dropped in a database. Some DDL triggers operate at the database level and only fire whenever the corresponding event occurs in a specific database. These triggers are predominantly concerned with objects in a single database, such as tables, indexes, users, procedures, views, and so on. An example of a DDL trigger that operates with database scope is create table. These are database level scope DDL triggers. Other DDL triggers operate at the server level and fire regardless of the database in use. These triggers are associated with server level objects, objects such as logins and endpoints. The create login DDL trigger is an example that operates with server scope. Let us understand the DDL trigger process. DDL triggers fire on completion of the triggering action. For example, a drop table trigger fires after the target table has been successfully dropped. Again, while comparing them to DML triggers, there is no equivalent to instead of triggers for DDL operations. Within the trigger definition, you can use the rollback transaction statement to abort the current transaction and undo any work that has been performed, including the DDL operation that caused this trigger to fire in the first place. A single DDL operation can fire multiple times. The order in which the triggers fire is not documented, and so you should not rely on DDL triggers to execute in any particular sequence. All right, let's move on and now understand how can one define a DDL trigger. You create a DDL trigger using the create trigger statement. In addition, you can use some syntax extensions that have been added to SQL Server. When you create a DDL trigger, you must specify the scope and type of DDL operation. Indicate the scope of a trigger using either on database or on all server clause in the trigger definition. The body of a DDL trigger can contain transact SQL statements or can refer to a method in a .NET assembly. I will speak about event data shortly, but on this slide, we see that it is used to retrieve and extract the event information, which is in XML type. Let's talk about the event data function. If you recall, your standard DML triggers create inserted and deleted tables, allowing the developer to examine the original data being changed and the new values they are being changed to. However, in DDL triggers, these tables are not present. Instead, you can use the event data function to obtain information about the event firing this trigger. The event data function returns an event underscore instance XML document whose content vary according to the target of the DDL trigger. All DDL triggers return a document that includes at least the following elements: post time, the time at which the trigger was fired. SPID, which is the ID of the database process causing this trigger to fire. Event type, which is the type of the event that caused the trigger to fire. An example of this is create underscore table or update underscore statistics. The remainder of the XML document contains information that is dependent on the command firing this trigger. Let us take a look at a sample XML document returned by update underscore statistics event. As you can see from this slide, we have the elements which we spoke about, such as event type, post time, and SPID. These are the standard elements from the XML document that you are likely to see on most other DDL events. As far as the other events for this update statistics event, we have the server name, the login name, the database name, the object type, and we can also extract the command text, as in this case it shows up as update statistics TBL underscore reports with full scan. You can use the value method of the document returned by the event data function to extract the event information. We will now take a look at an example which demonstrates how to create a DDL trigger which has a database level scope and uses the event information derived from event data function to log or audit the changes attempted and also prevent the change from occurring. For this example, we will create an audit table called audit underscore changes in the master database. Since we could create triggers defined in different user databases which may have to audit the changes to a centrally located place, the table definition mainly includes columns such as the date time, login time, object type, the event data. XML document itself could be stored as part of this audit. In this example of the trigger definition, basically the trigger is defined at a database level scope, and the statements or the events for which this trigger will be executed is specified over here. The commented out line, which is for DDL database level events, is a clause that can be used if you wish to execute a trigger for any DDL event that occurs at this database level. In the trigger body, we will use a variable defined of type XML. We can then use the event data function to extract the event information into this particular variable. We can also use a rollback statement within this trigger definition, which will roll back any particular event which caused this specific trigger to execute. After the rollback statement over here, we add an entry to the audit table that we earlier created in the master database. The insert statement over here uses the event data dot value method to extract specific information from the XML document the specific information of your interest could be the login name, the database name, the event type, the object name, and the T-SQL command itself. Let us try to walk through this example and take a look at its implementation. And now the trigger will be created. Let us now test this particular trigger. So the trigger is defined for these specific events. The drop table is the event that we will be testing. So let us go ahead and create this test table and insert a dummy record into this table. Now, when we attempt to drop this dummy table, it should execute the trigger code, which should roll back this drop table command itself and also log an entry into the audit changes table to record this information. So let's go ahead and drop this table. As you can see, the trigger execution did occur. The message that I get back is a print statement that I had added in the trigger body, and the error which suggests that the transaction has ended in the trigger. Because the trigger was defined to roll back the actual DDL event itself, we should be able to see this table and its contents. Because the trigger definition included a rollback statement, the previous drop table command would not have succeeded, and we should still be able to query the table that we tried to drop. And we can also query this audit changes table to check the entry of when this event took place, who was responsible for taking the drop table action, and for complete information, we could also refer to this entire XML document. We will now move back to the presentation slide. I hope that example was useful. Let us now move on to security concerns with DDL triggers. One of the security concerns with DDL triggers that you need to be aware of is that the caller of the trigger is the user that executes the DDL statement and causes this trigger to execute. To make this statement clearer, let us take an example. In this example, we have a user King who has sysadmin privileges, and we have another user named WannaBeKing who does not have sysadmin permission. However, the user WannaBeKing can create the DDL trigger, which in turn grants itself the sysadmin privileges. For example, this trigger definition, which is defined on a specific database, and for an event create underscore table, would execute and grant WannaBeKing the sysadmin rights. So the next time a user like King, which has sysadmin rights, attempts to create a table, will cause this trigger to fire under his context. And since he is a sysadmin, he would inadvertently grant sysadmin permission to user wannabe king. This is an obvious security threat. As a DBA, you need to be aware of the DML and DDL triggers that exist in the database and on the server instance. You can run a query like below, which has a union on sys.triggers and sys.server_triggers, which will return you the triggers defined both at database level and at the server level. You may also use the disable trigger command on the triggers that can harm the integrity of the database. Another way would be to audit the trigger events itself, like create trigger, alter trigger, and drop trigger. You may also audit the grant or revoke permissions. Starting SQL Server 2005, the syntax of the commands used for managing triggers have been extended, specifically for DDL triggers. You can obtain a list of available triggers in a database, including DDL triggers, by querying the sys.triggers catalog view, as was already seen in the previous slide. Sample query is shown here again. You may also retrieve the definition of a trigger by querying the sys.sql_modules catalog view. Alternatively, you can view database triggers using Object Explorer in the SQL Server Management Studio itself. The other commands listed on the slide include commands such as alter trigger, disable trigger, and drop trigger. All of such commands can be used to manage the DDL triggers. And here I have given some MSDN and blog links which you can refer for details with regards to DDL triggers. And that ends this video presentation for DDL triggers. Please feel free to post your questions, feedback, and suggestions. Thank you, everyone, and have a great day ahead.